And Entercon, I'm fucking livid that we are stuck in the timeline where Alex Jones is right. Kind of worse.
Why aren't the Amish afraid of COVID? Because they don't have TVs.
As I said, democracy is a system that reinforces authoritarian ideals.
Hope I don't get canceled. Talk to you.
Being a victim of a tragedy doesn't make you an expert in public policy.
I mean, AOC is a drama queen and she's full of shit.
Remember, they lost the Afghan war 10 years ago.
You brought a freaking guillotine.
They said, you don't get to tell us no, we're the state health department, and I said, hell no.
It wasn't making Christianity better, it was making rock worse.
What the fuck do you have on your face, Olivia?
You want to make the world a better place? Have some babies, and raise them to not be stupid.
Remember thinking, man, governments are not going to like this shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, activists, and people of the internet. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of O'Donnell for Liberty. As always, I'm your host, Justin. Now, thanks for bearing with the YouTube suspension and our inability to live stream due to having opinions on the internet that were deemed offensive to the censors in charge. But we're back better than ever. And before we get started, just remember, whatever platform you listen on, whether YouTube Live, Odyssey, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or on LRN.fm, you can help grow the show by liking, commenting, subscribing, and sharing with your friends. And if you enjoy the content, you can join our production team by visiting patreon.com/O'Donnell for Liberty. Again, that's patreon.com/O'Donnell for Liberty today. And make sure you check out snackswag.com for all your favorite Liberty merch, including some brand new designs for t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, coffee mugs, tote bags, and more. Again, that's snackswag.com. And you can check out that awesome new collection of ungovernable swag today. If you want to keep in touch between shows, follow me on social media and join our community Discord channel where you can chat with other fans about the show at any time. All these links can be found in the description of the video or podcast you're listening to, as well as on O'Donnell4Liberty.com. So check the description, grab that link today, and make sure you give it a visit. Now this week, we got something a little different for y'all. We're not going live, and our guest is a host in his own right. Earlier this week, I sat down with Brian Esko, of the host of the Searching for Political Identity podcast. And we discussed my views on anarchy, libertarianism, and the state of the modern world. And since Brian isn't on YouTube, I decided to wanted to share it with y'all. So strap in tight for this swapcast, and let's give our attention to Brian's awesome show. And just know I had a great time recording with him. He's a super cool kid. He's not a libertarian. He's on his way. I don't think he realizes he's a libertarian yet. He's a law student out on the West Coast. But he approaches things with an open mind, and he asks questions that matter to get to the root of the core of political philosophy. So I was excited to sit down with him. This is the second show I've done with him, and answer his questions and have a really great discussion about anarchy in the modern world. And I think it's something you guys would enjoy listening to. So if you want to go over and subscribe to his podcast, I'm going to put the links to that in the description as well. Yeah, but here it is today. Give it a listen, strap in, and I hope you all enjoy it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Searching for Political Identity. This is your affable host, Brian Esko, here to welcome you to episode 37. This one is a conversation I had with a friend of mine at this point, Justin O'Donnell. And the conversation really was good. I really enjoyed it, and I think you're going to like it. So before I hit play, let me just ask you to subscribe to my podcast and to my Substack. Why? Well, I have great content, don't I? Aren't I great? So it would be a great favor to me if on whatever podcast platform you're listening, you can hit the subscribe button. And you can find my Substack at brianeskow.substack.com. Thank you so much and enjoy this conversation I had with Justin O'Donnell. Catch you later. Justin, what up?
How's it going?
Great, man. Good to talk to you. Good to see you. Haven't chatted with you. We've tweeted back and forth for a while. We're Twitter buds now, and I appreciate your Twitter friendship. But it was a couple months ago that you and Chase Geyser came on and educated me and had some fun with me about Ayn Rand. And I got to know you a little bit that day, and I've been interested to follow you and your thoughts and learn about libertarianism. Actually, I think you're a really smart guy. I think you are really active politically. I'm very impressed with your wherewithal and your command of the political system. And so I think I've got a lot to learn from you. Loved the episode you did with Larry Sharp. But when did you record that? A few weeks ago at this point?
Yeah, right before I got suspended from YouTube.
What happened?
For having opinions.
Okay, we'll talk about that. All right, noted. That was a great episode. Plug your podcast real quick. It's O'Donnell for Liberty, isn't it?
Yeah, it's O'Donnell for Liberty. You can check it out on O'Donnellforliberty.com, where everything's hosted, or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you want to listen.
Is that four? It's F-O-R?
No, it's the number four.
Oh.
Because I'm lazy.
Nice. O'Donnell for Liberty. Got it.
Yeah, O'Donnellforliberty.com.
No apostrophe, right? No, you don't do apostrophes. No. Can't do it. That'll take you to fucking Kazakhstan.
Maybe. I mean, although Kazakhstan looks pretty lit right now.
yeah.
But, yeah, and primarily it's on YouTube and Odyssey as well, where you can check out the video stream of things.
Mm.
But we record live. I try and do every Wednesday night, but I have been suspended from YouTube for a couple weeks, so we haven't been doing stuff.
Before I ask about the suspension, who's your team? Who's we? Are you a one-man show that has cohorts, or what's your setup?
So I'm a one-man show right now, but we're trying to build a network. We're trying to build a thing. I got some great people behind the scenes working on editing and promotion and doing other things. And we're trying to get more like the intellectual dark web used to be a thing, and then it kind of collapsed in on it.
How old are you again, brother?
I'm 32.
32? You're 32. You're my age.
Yeah.
You're just a lot more smart than I am.
Do you remember the intellectual dark web?
No. I was fucking playing guitar like a retard. I don't know what I was doing.
I mean, it wasn't even that long ago. The intellectual dark web was people like Hans Hermann Hoppe, Stefan Molyneux. It kind of precipitated the alt-right. People like with how they thought and...
Like a Richard Spencer?
Controversial opinion. Yeah, that kind of shit. Shit that
is he a
really
fucking racist anti-Semite? What's his deal?
I don't fucking know. I just ignore him.
Okay, go on. As you were.
Yeah, and I'm trying to kind of bring something like that back, but for more of like independent thought. And it's not just me. Like, I know I'm a hardcore anarchist, and my political leanings tend to be quite radical and push some people off. But there are other people who come at things from a different approach, and I'm trying to put together a network of like-minded people who, like, what's like-minded about us is that we don't trust the government, but we all approach things from a different manner in different economic...
Different communication styles.
Yeah, and put together kind of a network to promote, like, all right, Monday nights is this show, Tuesday nights is this show, Wednesday nights is this show, and start a regular broadcast schedule.
Oh, that'd be so cool. Yeah, like an anarchist network almost.
Yeah, we're probably going to not be able to pull it off on YouTube, so we're going to have to find...
So tell me, what happened with YouTube?
They went after an interview I did months ago. It just, out of the blue, it just got nuked. And they suspended me for a couple weeks of privileges of posting or going live. And it was an interview with a guy named Sean Weitzman. He's a journalist. He's an independent journalist, and he's well-known. Like, he has IMDb credits and a lot of stuff that they've used his footage and his commentary for documentary-wise. But he was in Washington, D.C. on January 6, 2021, recording, filming, and interviewing people. And... he ended up turning over all of his footage to the FBI. He ended up cooperating fully with the FBI. He was an independent journalist. He just wanted to make sure that his footage got used for its purposes of informing people. And the FBI wanted to use it to track people down and prosecute people.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, okay, once it's in the public sphere, you can use it for that. And when they took all of his footage and they interviewed him and he cooperated with everything, they ended up arresting him and charging him with like 13 federal offenses. And he's facing like 8 years in prison.
Wow.
So I interviewed him about his experiences of the day, what he saw, what was going on from an objective standpoint. And he's somebody who's kind of the experience of dealing with the government in the aftermath of January 6th has turned him into an anarchist, where he went to January 6th more of an open-minded kind of centrist who didn't support Trump, was just there to kind of capture events, and dealing with the government since then has turned him into a full-blown let's go Brandon anarchist.
10-4, very interesting. So what was his thoughts on January 6th, 2021? Like, if he was there as an observer, what did he think was going on? Did he give you a sense? What did he think? What do you think? Tell me about that. Like, was it fucking crazy? Was it a hysteric Q storm nonsense, horse shit, psychopathic, just out of their minds, stupid, angry riot, went too far, technically terrorism, you know, in a sense, you know, violence for political reasons, you know, but so like that's kind of how I look at it. I don't call it an insurrection per se, but I violent mob, you know, more or less no dangerous or violent than the BLM protests, right? A lot of tragedies happen, believe me, but so I get it. It was an angry mob. We don't need to call it an insurrection, but what were his thoughts on what was going on?
He kind of echoed that, exactly. He echoed my thoughts on it a lot, too. It's like, I've taken the hard stance of, like, when people call it an insurrection and people call it a planned, violent attempt to overthrow the government, I'm like, that is an insult to the notion of rebellion, to the notion of insurrection, because I take what Thomas Jefferson says to heart. Like, the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of tyrants and patriots alike. Like, this country was built on treason and sedition and rebellion. Like, your heritage as an American is a heritage of rebellion.
No, absolutely.
To control you. This was a riot. This was a protest that devolved into a riot because a few bad actors decided to get violent and things spun out of control. People might have had some vague plan, like, oh, we're going to get inside the Capitol. And then what? Like, they were like a dog chasing a car. They never expected to catch it. And when they caught it, they had no clue what to do with it.
Wow. That's a great description. And I'm sure, you know, I don't think you're going to disagree that there should be accountability, you know, appropriate accountability, right? I mean, fuck. I mean, we don't live in an anarchist heaven yet. So while there's laws, we got to have appropriate accountability, I guess.
I'm not even sold on that. Like, sure, we don't live in an anarchist haven yet, and I don't think we will in my lifetime. I think government has grown to the point where dismantling it is a multi-generational process, and it's not something I'll see to fruition in my lifetime, but it's something we're seeing real strides forward towards elsewhere in the world. You look at Kazakhstan currently, granted they just erupted into a full-blown civil war over it, but their entire government resigned overnight. You look at places like northern Syria and Kurdistan. Kurdistan's been operating as autonomous village units for generations, hundreds of years at this point. They don't have a government. They're a true anarchist syndicalist system where people just live together harmoniously and peacefully and self-govern as need be. They have a fairly strong military compared to other regional powers in the area, and they don't have an hierarchy. They don't have rank. They operate in a anarchist system with no government, no...
The military doesn't try to control?
No.
They just don't even have that impulse? It's just cool?
No, because that's their cultural values. Like, the Kurdish people have been living as anarchists for thousands of years. And that's one of the reasons why they've kind of been easy for dictators like Saddam Hussein and Bashar al-Assad and Erdogan in Turkey to actually come in and take over their territory and try and rule them. But even when they get taken over, they still just kind of ignore the government and just operate on their own.
Thanks. Yeah. Let me ask this. Is libertarianism... And when you say you're an extremist, that's kind of that's you saying, hey man, I'm a full believer in anarchy, straight up, and I'm just going to advocate. You know, that's not, people shouldn't be afraid of the word extremist, should they, with you?
No, and it's, honestly, my joking with Twitter, where I self-identify as a domestic terrorist, extremist is my pronoun, it's more of a joke and a shot at kind of the way political identity has really taken a hold of over cultural identity and social identity in the past couple of years, and people identify themselves based on who they voted for in the last election rather than what they believe or common interest with their fellow man. And people don't associate with people that they think don't share their political values. And that really bothers me, because fundamentally human beings are social creatures, and you're never going to have full and total agreement between any two people. Like, if you agree with me 100% of the time, then one of us needs therapy. And I'm very outspoken. I don't hide my views. I don't wear a mask, so to speak, and hide who I am when I say I don't believe in the existence of the government. I believe the closest thing we've had to a philosopher getting it right was Lysander Spooner, when he wrote No Treason, The Constitution of No Authority, and he said that the Constitution is a failed document, that it doesn't protect human liberty. In fact, it enables tyrannical government under the guise of protecting human liberty.
Yeah, fascinating. So is the libertarian, is there a, in an, if realized properly, is a libertarian and an anarchist basically the same? And is anarchist just a more kind of catchy term to kind of draw people towards the idea of libertarianism in its pure form?
I mean, there's dispute over that, even within libertarian circles. If you look at the epistemology of the word libertarian and the history of the word and how it's evolved over the past couple centuries, the origin of the word libertarian was in French anarchists. And it was anarcho-socialists in France and Spain during the Spanish Civil War who were using the word libertarian to self-describe, as they were advocating for a complete overthrow of governance and hierarchical structures and the implementation of a socialist utopia with no hierarchy and no governance. It was really co-opted by American libertarians in the 1970s with the formation of the Libertarian Party after an upswing in pseudo intellectual libertarianism and anti-government thought within the Republican and conservative movements in the 1960s. And when the Libertarian Party formed, they formed as a predominantly anti-communist party. So it was a weird contrast to the historical usage of the term libertarian, because the word libertarian is traditionally always historically been associated with communists and socialists. And when the Libertarian Party of the United States formed, they co-opted that term in a intentionally capitalistic manner. And again, I don't even like the word capitalism. I don't self-identify as a capitalist. I think a modern colloquial understanding of what is and is not capitalism is skewed, and academia has really put people in a position where they're not fully informed when they're having these debates. But libertarian, I just did a show with a kid named Andrew Cordia from Massachusetts a couple weeks ago. Nobody really knows what it means anymore. Like, when I say I'm an anarchist, like, that doesn't describe my economic school of thought. That just describes my governance school of thought. Like, I don't believe there should be a government. That's not a play on whether or not I think we should be in a socialist system or a capitalist system.
Yeah, because I was just wondering, and back to the French origins, I was wondering when you said that, what would an anarchist socialistic or society look like? How does that jive?
So I fully believe that anarcho-socialism and anarcho-capitalism, like, they're like the two big branches of anarchist movements in the United States right now, where you have the anarcho-communists and anarcho-socialists, and those are the black flaggers, the antifas, where people don't believe in government, but they believe in redistribution of wealth, and the property is theft, and that you can't own private property. They're at a very big contrast with the anarcho-capitalist people, who believe that without a government regulating a market, you would have an inherently capitalistic regime, and free market exchange and private property is inherent anarchy. It's a huge divide in the anarchy movement, and I believe they're both kind of retarded. The reality is, in any truly post-state society, if you were to abolish government and you were not to have a governing body that regulated what economic activities took place, you would be neither capitalist nor socialist. You would be an inherently panarchist system where individual groups of people would adopt a consent-based economic derivative, where people would trade and barter on a basis of consent. As long as each exchange benefited both people in the exchange, it would happen peacefully. And if, in a socialist system, the required forced redistribution of wealth, I ask these people, okay, what if I don't want to share my shit? And they're like, well, you'll have to share your shit. And that's the rules. I'm like, now you're a government.
Right.
Congratulations. You're no longer an anarchist. You just created a government out of nothing. It's awful. And on the flip side, the capitalists, and I hate the word capitalism because it doesn't mean what people want it to mean. Again, like libertarian, unlike libertarian, it doesn't have a rich storied history of an evolution as a term and its use in colloquialisms. Capitalism first appeared in the English language in a translation of Das Kapital by Karl Marx, and he used it as a pejorative to describe what libertarians would say is corporatism and fascism, or what we have today in the United States. So
ruled by like oligarchy, in a
not
sense?
Not even so much oligarchy. It's the
ruled by the dollar itself. Rule by the money itself, the wealth itself.
It's ruled by people, and wealth is only a fraction of the power. It's more along the lines of control of the means of production and control of economic activity under the auspices of free market exchange, but with a heavily regulated system where the government regulates what people can and cannot do with their capital. And it's not a true free market. It is an inherently fascist system.
So a true free market is better. That's obviously a strong yes for you.
Yes. And
why?
Personally. Oh, my personal belief. Because I believe people know what's in their own best interest. And like, if I want to buy a freaking cow from my neighbor, I should be able to buy a cow from my neighbor at a price that me and my neighbor agree upon. The state shouldn't get a say in how that transaction happens, and the state shouldn't get a cut of that transaction just because it happens, and the state shouldn't come in and say, oh, now you have too many cows, you have to pay a tax. Like, a true free market system would see what we like to call spontaneous order, where, like, order arises out of chaos, because people in any economic system will want order, because order is good for business. Order means peace. But you don't need a government to have order. You just need cooperation and agreed upon.
So that's the big lie from your perspective, that you need a government for order.
Absolutely.
That's the big lie from the anarchist libertarian true perspective right there.
Correct.
Very interesting. Let me ask a question. Yeah. Let me think. First, let me think.
We like to use the term anarchy doesn't mean no rules. It means no rulers.
Right.
That as long as two people agree upon rules, then they can be rules between those two people.
Mm-hmm. The ultimate decentralization of power.
Absolutely. Yeah. And let's be honest. Like, if there's anything the past 2 years have shown us as Americans, is that the centralization of power is not inherently to the benefit of the people, because we've seen with the Black Lives Matter movement becoming politically divisive, and the government and the media were able to work together to frame the Black Lives Matter movement so readily and so easily as a politically divisive issue of white versus black and left versus right, when the reality is it should have been an us versus them from the get-go. Libertarians, Republicans, conservatives, people who are against state power were inherently put against those fighting against police brutality. And it was a divide and conquer tactic that the media executed so beautifully, because libertarians, conservatives, and Republicans should have been the first in line to march against Black Lives Matter against an oppressive totalitarian police state. Like, I ask all these Second Amendment activists.
Yeah, forget the race. Don't even get to the race issue. Just start. How about the oppressive authoritarian police state?
Right. And listen, the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire got in some big fucking. People got pissed with them over a tweet they put out a month or so ago that said racism isn't the pressing issue of our time. We need to stop focusing on it.
And what is then the government itself then?
Right. And people are like, what do you mean racism is not an issue? And I came in, I'm like, it's not. Okay. Like, let's be honest. Like, you will never cure racism because people will always have prejudices and biases. Right. That's just how people are. That's how people think. So racism is a permanent fixture. It will never go away. However, if you eliminate the institutions that allow racists to hold power over other people, you eliminate its potential to disenfranchise those who suffer under it. So, like, if the police didn't have power, then a racist cop isn't a big deal.
So part of the big lie from the anarchist perspective is you don't need a police force. What do you need a police force? Get your guns. Be a gun owner and protect your shit.
I love guns.
But what if people don't want to do that? Is it realistic?
Why can't they contract with somebody else to do it? Like, and here's the thing. When you live in
a group, like get together in a group, like a local government, you know, and then you get into the whole conversation, and I'm sure this comes up every day for you, you know? So at what point does it become... Now, let me ask this then. Okay, here's a question.
Yep.
Is the libertarian / anarchist, do they really want just to return to, like, is the idea that they're the true, like, Thomas Jefferson types, and the Democrats and Republicans of today are both just on the left of where most of the founders ever were, and that you just want to go back to kind of the anti-federalist?
Some do. Some absolutely do. There's a strong contingent of that. And some of the more economically minded libertarians, people who aren't really anarchists, and they do believe in, we call them minarchists because they're on the way to anarchy. They're just not quite all there. They do believe in a minimal state, and the minimal state with
minarchists,
protecting life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And those would definitely be people who would fall in lines with a Jeffersonian line of
that sounds like there. Just a conservative, like a constitutional conservative that kind of
when was the last time you saw one of those that was honest?
Well, That's a good question. I don't know. But just for the audience even, right? Like, let's just keep it... I mean, real quick, for the audience, like... Because I'm searching for political identity, right? So, and as I go through law school, you just get deeper exposure to the concept of property. And it is property is super controversial. I mean, I learned about property in first year law school, and I go, it's all about property, man. Like, I get it. Like, it's not about the economy. It's about property. Do you believe in it or not? Private property.
Let me ask you this. Do you believe you own yourself?
Own myself. That's a hell of a question.
Yeah. So this used to be my go-to question with people. It's like, do you think you own yourself? Because if you want to put together a system of beliefs that's based on the belief of private property, that should inherently come down to the most fundamental piece of property that cannot be taken away from you, and that's yourself, that you own your body, you own your life, you own yourself. And I used to ask people this as a man on the street type of thing when I was doing videos up in Concord, New Hampshire, and in Boston, and be like, ha-ha, it's a gotcha, do you think you own yourself? And they'd be like, yes, I own myself. Then you own the consequences of your actions. You also own the product of your actions. You can choose to enter into an agreement for wages with any employer that doesn't make the surplus value theft. You chose to make that agreement. But any government action, like a government coming in and taxing your wages and your income, the government is thereby saying that they're entitled to a portion of the product of your labor, and your labor is yourself. So therefore, you don't own yourself. The government owns you. And that's what the government says they do. And in fact, in the United States, it is illegal to commit suicide. It's a crime. And this was defended in court by a U.S. attorney who defended it in court. And the argument was that suicide deprives the state of a tax base.
That is fucking Matrix type shit.
Right. It's asinine. But when I was asking people these questions, everyone always answered with, yes, I own myself. Of course I own myself. And then we'd have the debate and the argument. And they'd be like, that's dumb as shit. And they'd walk away with at least a thought in their head.
Right.
But one time I was up in Concord, New Hampshire, and we asked this elderly woman who was walking by, and she's like, libertarians are just Republicans who like pot. I'm like, that's not true at all. We're Democrats with jobs. But I asked her, I'm like, do you think you own yourself? And she's like, of course I do. And she starts to walk off, and then she stops, turns around, comes back to us, and she's like, no, I don't. I'm like, what? She's like, I don't own myself. I'm on Medicare. The government decides when I can and can't get medical treatment and what treatment I have to get and what they'll cover. I'm in public housing. The government decides when I can and cannot leave my house and when I have to be open for an inspection. I'm on food stamps. The government decides what I can and cannot purchase to eat. She's like, I'm retired as property of the government. And I'm like, holy shit, she came to this on her own.
Wow. Jesus, that's powerful. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
But does she need it? Is it good? Is it good or bad?
She's given no choice in the matter. So whether or not it's good or bad or for her benefit or not, it's not her choice. And inherently, if you own yourself, you should have the right to make that choice for yourself.
Does she not have free will to change her situation? I don't know what her situation is. You know.
Nope. In the United States, once you're over the age of 65, you are obligated by law to go under Medicare. The United States government starts handling your medical care and treatment after that point. You have no option.
Is that right? Is that right?
Yep.
Wow. You can't. You're telling me that when you hit 65, you have to go on Medicare?
Correct. And the only time you're allowed to disenroll from Medicare is if you leave the country.
Okay, so, well, that's fascinating. And, you know, the question of whether it's good or bad lingers. It lingers, man.
So the question shouldn't be whether or not it's good or bad.
It's whether or not you had the choice.
Whether or not you had the choice, because libertarians fall back on a mantra. There's a mantra that libertarians have fallen back on for decades. Good ideas don't require force. If it's truly a good idea, you wouldn't need to force people into it. They would voluntarily sign up for it. And you look at everything the government does, and the government has a monopoly on so many services where competition is just prohibited. There's a long-running story of a preacher, and I don't know if he's still alive because he's been out of the news in the past couple of years, but he was in his 90s. He was an old man in Florida who kept trying to hold events to feed the homeless in his home city, and he kept getting arrested because it's illegal to feed the homeless. Only the government shelters are allowed to feed the homeless in that city. And he would get arrested, go to jail, get out of jail, and immediately hold an event to feed the homeless and get arrested again. And he was doing this for like a decade. And he was in his 90s, and he kept railing. He's like, it's bullshit. If I want to use my money and my security to help those who are less fortunate than me, I should be allowed to. You shouldn't have the right to tell me I am disallowed by law from helping my fellow man.
That seems reasonable.
Right, but it didn't win in court.
I've got a lot to learn, man, even as a guy going into his – actually, my last semester in law school starts tomorrow, but – I guess I've had my head in the sand for a long time. You're very well read. I love talking to you.
These are the things. Like, I hate the well read arguments. I tell people to stop reading books and to just live their experiences, because like I've read everything and reading didn't do shit for me. Like I read Rothbard in college and came away from reading Rothbard with whatever. I read Spooner, came away from whatever. I read Atlas Shrugged. I thought it was a terrible book. We've had that discussion before. It's lived experiences, and if you just open your eyes to the world around you, and one of the fun games I like to play with people is, like, regulated or not. Like, name any daily activity, anything you do in your life, and we can discuss how the government regulates it.
Brushing my teeth.
You're using the water in the city tap. The government regulates what the chemical content of that water is. The government also has regulation standards on what's allowed to be sold as a toothbrush, how many bristles it has, what the stiffness of those bristles is, what the length of the toothbrush is. Those all have to meet FDA standards before it can be sold to you. The toothpaste itself is regulated by several different medical bodies, including the FDA and the there's a ton of them. And it has to be signed off on before they can release it. It's something that does. You can't just go make your own. You can make your own toothpaste, but you can't just go buy toothpaste from somebody who's making it homemade on a farm using animal fat or other things that have historically been used to do so. And if you have well water and you don't treat your well water properly, the government can come in and condemn your building.
And these sound like, you know, I feel like I'm Thomas Anderson in the beginning of The Matrix, and I'm going to say, this sounds great. Good. I don't want shit toothpaste. I haven't met Morpheus yet in that example. Like, do I want a world where I go to CVS? Do I want to not go to CVS and grab toothpaste and pay the extra $2-3, whatever it is, because of that?
Or better yet, do you want a world where you can go to CVS and there's 1,000 different brands of toothpaste with different compositions because some of them might work better for people who have different health conditions and everyone's bodies are different? Or do you want one that's completely all organic and doesn't use the chemicals but still functions as a toothpaste soap using animal fat and lye? Because that's illegal to sell in the United States, but it has tons of historical precedent to tell you how it works.
So my response would be, I think that should be available. I mean, you know, so long as it's not a clear, it's so, I mean, I, you know, and this is so funny how I guess the very existence, you know, it comes down to this. Unless it's a clear and present danger to public health, then sure, it should be available, right? I mean, that's what I would say. If it's not, as long as it's not. But why shouldn't it be available? So long as it's the way it's available is not, you know, dangerous in any way. You could present a hazard to an average person, type of thing. Whatever, reasonable regulation. I don't know.
Yeah, because we've entered a world where corporations, and this is where I differ from kind of my capitalist friends and people who still believe in American capitalism. I think American capitalism is as bad as socialism and communism, and it should never be considered a good thing.
What's so bad about American capitalism?
The fact that Colgate can spend $1 million a year on a lobbyist who goes in and convinces the FDA that their formula for toothpaste is better than the formulas that have been used for 1,000 years. And so instead of just saying, haha, we've got better toothpaste, they lobby the government to outlaw the competition.
What would you say our form of government is, roughly?
Fascism. The United States is a corporate fascist state. It has been
Since how long? Since Lemuel Shaw,
1919, passage of the income tax. Since as early as you could buy a congressman. Like, democracy is a bad thing. Democracy is a bad idea from the get go.
What is the ideal? Anarchy, of course, not aristocracy.
Yeah. Yes. But like the Winston Churchill said, democracy is the worst system of government except for all the others. That's how he goes about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean it's that much better.
Is it that a constitutional republic / democracy is the worst? You know, pure democracy, I would think that as long as there's a republic aspect, then there's the potential for all the corruption. I mean, as soon as you send someone a pure democracy might be potentially better than a constitutional republic, right? In the guise of a democracy, would an Athenian democracy be better?
Pure democracy is absolutely the worst.
Mm.
Pure democracy is mob rule. Pure democracy is, to put it in childish terms, two wolves and a sheep deciding what's for dinner. In more realistic terms, it's 51 million people deciding that 50 million people don't get a voice.
Gotcha. So pure democracy is just majoritarian rule.
But majoritarian mob rule, and it can only work through oppression, because by its very nature, pure democracy, there will be an oppressed party. The minority in any decision will be forced through the monopoly of force that the state holds to abide by the will of others and whether or not it's in their own best interest.
Mm. Yep, that's good stuff. No.
And unfortunately, we don't live in a constitutional republic anymore.
We live in a corporate fascist state.
Well, corporate fascism, sure, but even our form of our form of electoral representation is...
What would you call it then?
Democracy.
Oh, I see.
Like, since the passage of the 17th Amendment with the direct election of senators, and the founders never intended senators to be elected directly. The founders knew that democracy was bad. Right. When the founders were framing the new government, the first pitch wasn't democracy. It wasn't a constitutional republic. It was another monarchy.
Mm.
That was the first pitch, because the reality is there are many, many arguments to how a constitutional monarchy is better than a democracy.
I totally feel that. Absolutely. I get it.
But with the past, like when they came up with our system of government, the way they framed it, with the only form of direct democracy we had was the House of Representatives. Only 1/3 of the government was directly elected.
Right.
And at that time, even, it wasn't universal democracy.
Right.
It was more of a timocracy, where like voting was still restricted to those who held property.
Yeah.
And there's a big lie told in, like...
So are you anti-voting rights?
Here's the thing. I'm anti-voting rights based on history. And one of the things... I hate the narrative and the debate around voting rights because it's flawed and it's built on fake history and, like, poorly taught history. Like, we're discussing this Voting Rights Act and we're talking about a historical, bad juju and, like, treating people poorly based on race. And the reality is, when the slaves were freed and black people were granted the right to vote inherently, black people had better representation in our democracy than white people. And just based on the fact that we are a democracy, like, there was a point in Reconstruction Southern America where every single black person had a vote based on legislation and what was done, but only white people who owned property could vote. So 98% of Confederate soldiers never voted in their lives because they didn't own property and didn't have a say in their government.
Right. And is there an argument that that's good, or where do you stand on that?
There's an argument that it's good, but there's also an argument that it's bad. One of the original pitches about who should be able to vote, and I forget which founding father proposed this, but it was shot down, was that only those who owned property could vote. Okay. And it was every person got one vote. Any person who was educated in political science got two votes.
Oh, wow.
Every person who owned property got a proportional vote in a separate election based on the amount of property they owned and were taxed on. And anybody who had been on welfare or public benefits in the past 2 years got zero votes, regardless of other statistics.
That's quite interesting. I guess the point is, it's not so simple, this whole, well, everyone should have the right to, I mean, I'm going to get creamed for this.
Jean-Paul Sartre says, like, democracy can only work until those in power realize that they have the ability to vote themselves gifts from the public treasury. And the moment that the voting base realizes that they have the ability to vote on how the public treasury is spent to their own benefit, they'll continue to vote to spend the public money on their own benefit to the point where democracy fails to insolvency. Mm-hmm. And every time a democracy has failed to insolvency in history, it's been followed by a dictatorship.
Yeah, that's interesting. Very interesting. Let's land the plane in a few minutes. Amazing. So there's a lot to digest. Where do I want to spend the next few minutes with you? Let's think. So have we had any good presidents, in your opinion?
You don't want me to answer that question.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I'll give you this one. In my lifetime at 32 years old, objectively, without a doubt, the best two presidents we have had in my lifetime, in ranking of number two and number one. Number two is Donald Trump, and number one is Joe Biden. And there's a very, very simple metric by which to describe to land that on. Donald Trump was the very first president in my 32 years of life that did not start a new war after being elected. Joe Biden was the first president in my life to end a war he inherited.
Wow. That's fucking amazing. That's something really amazing.
Yeah. And by that metric alone, as somebody who, like, anarchy aside, economics aside, I am first and foremost an anti-war activist, and I think the American hegemony and the American military and American foreign policy has been a leading cause of a lot of the world's suffering over the past 70 years and since the end of World War II. That's even longer now. Jesus Christ. Since the end of World War II, American foreign policy has been a direct result of most of the world's suffering, in my opinion. And the fact that Joe Biden became the first president in my lifetime to end a war makes him the best president.
That is so incredible and kind of a nice place to kind of tuck it. I'd love to talk to you again and get into the foreign policy aspect. Sounds like you've got a lot to say about that, because I was wondering this whole time, like, what happens with the military? What happens with national security? What happens with foreign relations if you dissolve the government and go to just not self-rule, that would be democracy, which would be horrific, as we've discussed, but
I'm not even the person to answer that, and I'm going to point you to an episode I did on my own show with a man named Karn Ross. Karn Ross, he's a former British diplomat. He was a deputy director in the British Foreign Services, and he left the British Foreign Services during the Iraq War when he became a whistleblower. And he went to the UN, and he blew the whistle on the CIA and MI6 manufacturing evidence of weapons of mass destruction to start a war with Iraq. and he lost his job, lost his livelihood, but blew the whistle on an illegal war and war crimes that were committed by the United States and Great Britain. And what he's done since is he has founded a nonprofit called Independent Diplomat, where he's a full-blown anarchist. He's more of an anarcho-socialist, but I love him. I admire his work intently. And he has done great work helping anarchist groups in Kurdistan and Syria and Lebanon and all over the Middle East set up and provide diplomatic services between them as an independent international NGO.
Got it. Interesting. There's got to be a web, some sort of web.
Yep.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. It's such a valid question. And one of the things I brought up to him was, I think a lot of the problem with anarchist philosophy is that most of the anarchist philosophy we cherish as the basis of our understanding of anarchy and government was written by long dead authors who could not have imagined a world so connected as we live
right,
in today.
Right.
But the reality is that technology has evolved at a much faster pace than a human understanding of geopolitics. And right. so we live right. in a world that is so
You now have to react to that. No choice.
You have no choice. You cannot live in a bubble anymore.
And that's ironic, but it's not totally intellectually inconsistent, philosophically right, inconsistent.
But like Emma Goldman and Kropotkin and Murray Rothbard and Friedrich Hayek, when they wrote, they never envisioned the internet.
Right. Elon Musk, Starlink. Yeah.
Right. Like, and how does that change global trade and global communications? Right. And like, how do you manage those without a government? Well, Karn Roth, that's what he does. He helps people manage those without a government.
Please plug your podcast one more time. And how do you spell that guy's name?
Karn Roth, CarneRoss. You can check out the show on O'Donnell, the number 4, liberty.com, or find me on YouTube at O'Donnell for Liberty. Follow me on Twitter at O'Donnell for NH. I got a blue check mark, real easy to find me. Or just search Justin O'Donnell. The podcast is published on Spotify, Apple Podcast. It now streams to Facebook's new podcast service. And if you're in the listening area of LRN, Liberty Radio Network, LRN.fm, we are on the radio every week with their weekly podcast circuit.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm a fan of yours. Like I said, I appreciate the Twitter friendship, and I consider Sidney a friend at this point. So, I appreciate your time and your knowledge, man. It's great talking to you. Awesome, brother. I'll talk to you soon. All right, man. Have a great day. Later.
Thanks again for tuning in and joining us tonight. Make sure you hit that like button and leave a comment below to let us know your thoughts. If you haven't subscribed, go ahead and hit that big red subscribe button on YouTube and turn on notifications to get alerted every time we go live. If you enjoyed this content, you can join our production team on Patreon by following the link in the description. And don't forget to follow on social media and join our community Discord channel by following the links in the description as well. The best part of all of this is the community that we're building and growing. So go ahead and join us. And thanks once again to our awesome sponsors and patrons for making all of this possible. And if you can't catch the show live, you can always catch it the next day on YouTube, Odyssey, Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Breaker, and wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts. So until next time, everybody, be free.